Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Caitlin Walsh. She's an artist, a poet, specializing in anatomical watercolor and oil paintings. And we're talking about her new book, Anatomy is Beautiful, a collection of anatomical art and poetry. Caitlin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I love this book so much. It lived up to my expectations. I think that was the most important thing. I obviously read about it first. I ordered it, and it was like, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, that makes me so happy. I feel like people go into two different categories, people who get it and people who are like, this is weird.
Oh, I totally get it. And I think I wrote to you, like, yeah. One of my first guests several decades ago was an anatomical illustrator. And what he did, though, is he stood in operating rooms to sketch, and then he had to do very, not so much artistic, but true to life, either black and white drawings or, you know, color representations. But he still talked about the viscera in terms I mean, he was talking like an artist would talk about his or her model. It was amazing. Now, the story of this and how you got here is fascinating. You start out, you credit your grandfather, your grandpa, for creating your interest in anatomy. And that that story alone fascinated me. Talk to me about that.
Sure. Yeah. My grandpa, who's turning 92 this month, he started me on this path of seeing anatomy as a series of stories rather than just something you have to learn on your way to being some sort of healthcare provider. So when we were little, because he loved anatomy the way that I do now, and so when we were little, we would sit at the dinner table whenever my grandparents would come over, and he would quiz us and tell us stories about anatomy and then kind of quiz us the next time to see what we had remembered. And then if we got it right, we got a nickel, and we were really excited to get that nickel.
That's always a good motivation.
That was like my main source of income when I was seven. And so he would, you know, what's the smallest bone in the body?
Wow.
And the smallest three bones, and maybe the ones in the ear. And then what are they called? The malleus, incus, and stapes. And then those three bones each, you know, look like a hammer, anvil, and stirrup. So we'd remember that, and he'd kind of show us in pictures. So he just got us on that storyline, and it just stuck with me. I just never stopped loving anatomy. When we would talk about it in school, it'd be like, yes, I am revved. It's kind of weird.
But you know what? When I read that, Caitlin, that reminded me of there are certain children who are enamored of dinosaurs or prehistoric creatures, and it's a lot around those names and their mastery of those names, or the mastery also of knowledge.
And, exactly.
I think
good correlation.
Yeah, and I think if only parents realize that these kinds of things, they seem trivial, they have a huge effect on the child.
Yes. Yep. They can latch on. That's definitely what happened with me.
Like, there's an example. Is it Sella turcica? Turcica?
The Sella turcica. Yeah. Oh, that's my favorite one. Yep.
Because it's a Turkish saddle.
Yep, in Latin. And I just love just explaining it to people feels like poetry. That's what I wrote in my book, where it's Turkish saddle. It's this little thing that looks like a saddle that sits on top of the sphenoid bone, which is a butterfly-shaped bone in the brain, which is, in itself is a gorgeous bone. And then nestled in that Turkish saddle is the pituitary gland hanging off of the brain. And it's just like this beautiful moment, visually, at least in my mind, of this delicate looking bone hanging, holding on to this really important structure. And I've always just loved that one. Yeah. Love it.
So you developed this real enthusiasm. So a lot of people listening will probably go, well, she's well on her way to being a surgeon, but not so fast.
Right. Exactly. Not so fast. I've always been an artist at heart, so I had this love for anatomy, but I just remember saying in, like, kindergarten, I draw every day, and I did, and I still do. Like, it's this compulsion that only one of my kids has for me, but I got to draw. I have to draw. I have to paint every day.
Oh, wow.
It soothes my heart, and it's just part of who I am, wow. which was a surprise to my parents because everybody else in my family is in a medical or scientific oriented field. So this, I don't know where this came from quite. But so I went, because I liked anatomy, I started off college being pre-med, but within a year I was pretty sure that I just missed art too much. And then I found out that you could go to graduate school for medical illustration. And so I just knew what I was going to do from that moment on. So I went to University of Illinois, Chicago for biomedical visualization is the fancy term, but where I got to go, take classes with med students and PT students and dental students to learn anatomy and physiology. And then we would take art classes, fine art classes
oh, wow.
on the side. Yeah, it was just as cool as you think. It was.
Oh man,
I'm just so happy this career exists.
Now, what you did find out is, and I understand this, that the future of medical illustration at that time was considered to be animation and web development.
Yes,
taking the human artistic sort of part of it out of the equation.
Yep, yep.
And here you are, a passionate artist and a passionate anatomist. So,
yeah, when I was in school, and everything is centered around accuracy, of course, because mm-hmm. our job as illustrators is to correctly portray things, but dry accuracy, I would call it. But even in graduate school, I was always kind of making these little stories in my head and thinking about the best way, like, this is how I would teach it. I would make it into this story. And so I always had that more creative approach in my head, but I did do a lot of front-end development and end up, for a while, my career after school was working for a company out in San Francisco doing front-end development, and they happened to have some medical clients, so I could talk the talk.
I bet you could.
But I still miss doing art. Yes, exactly.
Now, the fascinating thing, though, is when I look at it, it looks like you're just continuing a tradition that starts with people like mm-hmm. Da Vinci and Vesalius
yes.
and all the other great medical artists. I don't want to say illustrators, but artists. As a matter of fact, Leonardo da Vinci is quoted throughout your book.
Yes. He and Michelangelo are two of my favorite artists because they approach things from an anatomical point of view. I feel like that it might be too cliche or surface to say your favorite artists are these Renaissance artists, but I just love their anatomical
oh, no.
approach. And you just made my year with that compliment by saying I'm a continuation of those guys, because that was really nice to say. Thank you.
Well, I think most people are ignorant of the whole tradition of fine mm-hmm. art anatomical drawings that especially yeah. get interesting in the 17th, 18th, and 19th century.
Absolutely.
There's some incredible French artists and you're in that tradition, and it's so. Except you sort of up the ante, because not only you're doing sort of a 20th century approach,
yep.
but you decided to become a poet. Like, where do you get off?
Those poems wrote themselves.
Oh, I'm sure. Now wait. So now you got to explain that part. You know, reading the intro to the book, I'm going, okay, I understand this, and this is great. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes this impulse to like, okay, you've done these beautiful paintings. Now I'm going to sort of gild the lily and it's like I'll write these incredible poems that go with it. Were you a poet? Were you a poet always?
My dad liked poetry a lot.
Okay,
he would read to us. And I just like good words and I like well-written things.
Wow.
I'm a very avid reader, but it just started with the Ora Serrata was the first one I wrote.
Yeah.
Cause I had just painted that and I was trying to come up with a social media post about it. And I was like, well, I'll just write a poem. And it was just, like I said, it was just easy. Cause I think of these little guys, these little anatomical structures as having a bit of a story, ones that are being left out or ones that are heroes or ones that are wannabe heroes. So all I had to do is just kind of think of my favorite stories that I heard in anatomy. And then it wasn't as hard as you'd think, because the plot of my poems is always there. I always had a little plot point I was trying to get
wow.
across. And then it was just coming up with the creative words.
Can I want to hear one. I've obviously read the ones that are in the book. But Let's hear you recite one.
Oh, sure. Do you have a favorite, or should I pick one of my favorites?
I actually like all of them, and I'm not kidding you. I like the short ones, the long ones. I even like the first one, which is a talk with your PT.
Yeah. I love, because my mom and my sister are PTs, and I just
That's cool. Okay. But it's the artist's choice.
Okay, I'm going to do the one on the one I call Plumbing 2.
I know this one.
About the colon, because even my painting of the colon, some people are like, I can't believe you painted that. And then other people are like, I get it. It's beautiful. And people don't know. So there's a bit of humor in it just because it is about our plumbing. All right. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Plumbing 2. Food gets swishy inside of the squishy tubes of the digestive tract. Let's find a liking for our inner piping that empties our waste out the back. The stomach makes chyme, and then it's time for the duodenum to have some fun. Enzymes are poured, nutrients get stored, then the chyme continues its run. The jejunum and ileum, both with the trillion microvilli which ceaselessly absorb, water and nourishment that block with discouragement the waste that it cannot store. Perhaps it's cruel, but we now call it stool when the leftovers enter the colon. Up over and down, the stool goes around, traveling along in slow motions. Now, you may be aware that the colon needs care. Sudden changes will stop it from going. Give it fiber and liquid, or it'll be restricted, though if you squat, things will get rolling. After it finishes its route and the stool comes out through the rectum and a couple of sphincters, you must give it a look like it's your favorite book, because stool is your health predictor. And that one is for my mom, because she is a PT but specializes in gut health. And she's the one who's always reminding me of these things at least once a month.
You know, your children are going to love you, because you're going to, I hope you're going to teach them these poems.
I really do. I do probably too much.
No, you
then
don't.
I get
you can't do it enough.
I read them like 10 in a row, and they're like, can we be done?
Well, the other thing about these poems is, because they're based on the actual actions that are going on in our inner workings, they're educational. You can't say that about a lot of poetry. Like, that was story of what your digestive system does.
Right. I do like, because when I was taking anatomy and physiology, I just felt like I wanted to write something that, too, if you felt like memorizing in poetry form, it would help you actually remember the braiding of the brachial plexus or the what all the cranial nerves do. I learned that from my kids when they were in school. They would learn like ditties. They want you to like memorize the countries in Africa, and it's always easier in like song or rhyming format. So my dream is that at least one med student somewhere finds this book and uses it to help them on an exam.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Caitlin Walsh. She's a poet. She's also a visual artist specializing in anatomical watercolor and oil paintings. And we're talking about her new book. It's really unique. Anatomy is Beautiful, a collection of anatomical art and poetry. I want to talk to you, before we run out of time, I want to talk to you about Lion Road Art. Can you talk to me about the creation of that?
Sure, absolutely. So I had talked about how I went to graduate school for medical illustration, but that takes a much more technical approach. And I was in San Francisco working on coding, front-end development, so still designing for medical clients, but I missed doing art a lot, so I'm still trying to do it a little bit in my spare time. Coding is art, but not that fine art, classical medium. And I, very soon after moving out to San Francisco, I found out I was pregnant, and then that there were big problems with my pregnancy, and my son ended up being born at 2 pounds, 5 ounces, a couple months early, and spent about 3 months in the hospital. So it was at that time that I started painting again, because it was just more stressful and more scary and more everything than I can convey. And painting for me is such a stress reliever. Art in general is just, it's just so good for your mental health. So I started taking, like, we got the news. There's so many things that were going wrong with him, and so many things you're scared will go wrong as they get older. And it's really easy to focus on that. But then we got this news that his kidneys were finally doing well. And I was like, oh, yes. And I remember painting Henry's Loop of Henle, which is a part of the kidney, because I was just excited. And it helped me to focus on what was going well. So fast forward, I got through that time through painting. And my son's doing great now. He's now 11, almost 12.
Wow.
But when my daughter was born 2 years after that, and my son was having just to start more therapies just to help him with his development. And it just hit me that these more fine art approaches, the more abstract approaches that I had started painting when he was sick in the hospital, people might like them and they might hang them in their facilities, in their clinics and hospitals, because they're not gross. They're a friendly approach to anatomy. And so I started my company about a decade ago, Lion Road Art, and I named it Lion Road because that's where I was living when my son was in the hospital.
And you should go to the website. You should go to the website, yeah. I want to mention, because there's a lot there, including prints.
500 paintings, yep.
I know. It's like, I thought there was a lot of paintings in the book, and then I went to your website, and there was all these other things. And this brings up an interesting thing, because you don't just paint viscera. You paint a lot of bones, and then you will paint processes.
Yes.
And talk to me about that, because that's a very different kind of painting.
Yes, absolutely. That wasn't my plan going into it, but mostly now I run on commissions. I get commissions for very specific things, processes or pathologies, and I just maintain the copyright so then I can put the prints online. But I so love doing, the fertility cycle, or even just a surgical illustration for surgeons who have gone through pretty insane surgeries, and they want to commemorate what they've been able to accomplish with some surgical illustrations. So those are just fun, different approaches to the same thing that I'm trying to do, which is make things that are typically complicated or gross or both and turn them into something beautiful.
Yeah, but they're never gross. After I look at your paintings, you can't really say they're gross. Not only that, they're in your insides. They're you.
Exactly.
they can't be gross.
It's amazing. If you just take out the color red, people realize, oh, that is cool and gorgeous and amazing. As long as they don't think of blood. I don't get to paint with red very often. I like it when I can.
Well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about your media. A lot of these are watercolors, but there are oils and pen and inks. And even one mixed media, that's the semi-permeable phospholipid bilayer.
Yeah. Yep.
Talk to me about your use of materials. Did you always start out with watercolors?
I did. I always say watercolor is great for busy parents because it's quick setup, quick takedown. And so that's why I started with it, because I was a busy parent, and I just fell in love with it. I feel like it's a bit of an underdog. People don't realize how dramatic it can be. It softens things. But secretly, my true love is oil. It's just really, it's not parent friendly because kids get into the paint. It takes months to dry. But I like the drama of it for sure. My next goal in life, my first one is to complete this book. My next goal is to do big oil paintings of all the bones in the body.
Oh.
I'm only like a third of the way done, but I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
You mean in a single skeleton or?
No,
an entire like book of the skeletal anatomy.
Highlighting each bone separately, so each painting would be like a hero image of an individual.
Well,
bone.
I understand that with femurs and you know so on and so forth, but when you start getting to these little metatarsals and stuff like that.
Yeah. I will combine the metatarsals. That's the one.
Okay, you're not going to do them.
And I combine the ribs already. Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm not a masochist.
Now, I want to ask you about the one mixed media piece that's in this book. That works. It works. But do you do a lot of mixed media work?
I don't. And again, it's the time thing. And usually I'm lucky enough to have, like, working on 10 to 20 commissions at a given time, or I have a queue of 10 to 20 commissions. So those are more personal pieces that I like to do on my own. I actually have a couple, and one just won an award and is going to a state competition here in Wisconsin. So they're cool, they're exciting, but they're harder to make prints from because people want the original. And so I just don't have time to work on them as much as I would. But I love the idea of using my leftover materials. I'm a bit of a material hoarder, and I love finding ways to use all those discarded watercolor paintings because not everyone's a win, and sometimes, you know, I want to cut them up and make new upcycle them, if you will.
Before we move on, can I ask you to read another poem? Now, if you were to ask me, I love your lists of things like bones and muscles with weird names. Muscles with weird names.
I have that one bookmarked right here. It's literally open in front of me. I was going to do that one next.
Oh, I love those list ones.
Okay, should I do that one?
Yeah.
Okay, this one is called Muscles with Weird Names, Part 1. Platysma is abysmal at making a face look happy. Anconius gets acrimonious because his elbow job is crappy. Obturator is the operator of keeping the femur in place. Multifidus is meticulous about being the spine's best brace. Popliteus admits he does a lot to stabilize the knee. Pictinius is pretty plus. She's a crucial leg adductee. Sternocleidomastoid has a factoid. He is the strongest neck muscle by far. Gastrocnemius is dreamiest, the lower leg's biggest star. Buccinator's the creator of blowing, sucking motions. Rhizorius is notorious for giving the mouth some emotion. Saying muscle names are fun, but for now I think I'm done. That's it.
Those remind me of poems by people like Ogden Nash and stuff like that from the early part of the 20th century.
My inspiration was Silverstein, who was also from Madison, Wisconsin. Yep. I have one about a stomach ache and thinking all the things it could be, and then it turns out to be gas. that I was just thinking of him the whole time I was writing it, the whole time.
Now, I want to talk to you about color choices.
Oh, yeah.
Do you strive for realistic color choices, or do you take some liberties?
I strive for the opposite of realistic color choices.
So you're a fauvist.
Yes. I so enjoy painting accurately because that was part of my training. So if I'm going to paint highly accurate things, like a lot of times I love working on dissection paintings, which the pictures are off-putting, if you will. But all I have to do is switch up the colors, and lo and behold, it becomes beautiful, as I had mentioned. And it's just a nice way to switch it up or make something a focal point that's usually hidden behind the scenes. So I have a lot of fun with color, making the palette something just unexpected.
What's fascinating is also in this book are medical instruments, like the stethoscope, and your approach to doing the stethoscope is very different.
Yes.
It's very solid.
Technical.
It's technical. You're right. It could go into I don't know what medical book would have a picture of a stethoscope, but it is. It's like, that's what it is. I mean,
it's funny that you mentioned that. Yeah. Cause that's part of my, I teach on the side too, just for fun, because, you know, I'm not busy enough. why not teach in the classes? But I talked to my students about the two different schools of thought for watercolor, the two different approaches, and the flowing, ocean-like feel is just, there's a completely different way of going about it compared to what I call technical watercolor paintings, where you can truly be very, very tight and precise, and people wouldn't even expect that it's watercolor. And I like doing that with those instruments.
Now, in your painting of the amygdala, is that a self-portrait?
Yeah, that is a self-portrait.
Good to know.
That was during COVID. And amygdala.
Why am I not surprised?
I was stressed.
Every artist, writer, and whatever that I've interviewed in the last year or two, that was a COVID project.
Yep. That one just a lot was going on. It was like, well, I'm going to do a self-portrait of my stress structures of the brain.
Wow.
Because why not?
And as I mentioned before, you even do cellular processes like mitosis, meiosis. You do all the different kinds of blood cells. That's a great poem too, by the way.
Thank you. I like that one.
Wow. So what's your
favorite? I like doing the histology for sure. It lends itself to watercolor.
There's no stopping you. We're almost out of time. I got to ask you, what's your favorite organ?
You know what?
As an artist, I guess as an artist, I want to ask you as an artist.
I want to say something really profound and cool.
Don't. What, say it. Be true. Be real and truthful.
I would say I like the heart because of a specific component of the heart, which is the chordae tendinae. Those are the pieces they look like. The strings on like a hot air balloon. And I so enjoy painting that. Any excuse I can. I just painted one just this past week. Because I wanted to.
And we only have 1 minute left. That means that you actually repaint organs you've painted before.
Yes, not as often as I would like. I would like to offer even more options for other organs, but yes, I do get to sometimes.
Are you going to have an art exhibition soon?
I have one here at the Overture in Madison. I get into shows periodically throughout the year. So I have one at the Overture Theater here in Madison in July. It's actually up right now, the big bones that are finished currently.
I recommend, we're completely out of time. People go to Lyon, spelled Lyon, Road Art, and look at her work. My guest tonight has been Caitlin Walsh, poet and visual artist specializing in anatomical watercolor and oil paintings and poems about the same subject. And you can see a lot of her work in her new book, which is beautiful. Anatomy is Beautiful, a collection of anatomical art and poetry. Caitlin, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.